conversation with Catherine Torpe. Hi, Catherine.
Hello.
So you're the new executive director of the Focusing Institute.
Yes.
But maybe in this conversation, we're not going to so much go into this role as talk a bit about what it's like for you to be a focuser.
Great. Thank you, Serge. So, just to touch on my new role as executive director, I'm really so grateful that my work life and my focusing life can come together in that way. And just really grateful for being in a role where I get to work with focusers, work in focusing, and that the people who will be working with me are people who understand and live in their felt senses of things and are able to make decisions and move forward from a space of felt sensing, so that we can co-create out of that our individual felt senses and our collective felt senses. So I'm just really grateful and feeling the joy and the specialness of the focusing community and for me the ability to bring some of my my past experience in this professional role to what I love, which is focusing.
Yeah. So you're talking about that sense of living from the felt sense.
Yes.
Acting from the felt sense.
Yes.
And so maybe touch upon, in a way, what's your, you know, how did you get to focusing, what it's been like for you, what interests you, you know, just some of these questions.
Okay. Well, I've been focusing since 1996. I learned from the bio-spiritual focusing tradition from a woman who was a spiritual director for me, Janet Abels, here in New York City. And for me, it was, I think, probably for a lot of focusers. I mean, I don't know who I would be if it weren't for focusing. I'm so grateful for it because I really had no idea until Janet Abels taught me focusing and began focusing with me in our spiritual direction meetings. I really had no idea that the very things that I had carried with me, the sadness and loneliness and fears that I had been carrying with me, were in fact cherished companions. I really had no idea. I thought they were my enemies. When you find that the very one that you thought was an enemy is a beloved friend, there's nothing like that, and the potential that, as I'm saying those words, I'm thinking about things like the conflicts, world conflicts among ethnic groups. I noticed when I was very young and I began to get to know people from other countries, it was always so strange to me I remember a young woman from, I think, a Scandinavian country. You know, she said all the jokes in her Scandinavian country were about the people from this nearby Scandinavian country. that they were always the butt of the jokes. So she did not understand, this was back in the 70s, she couldn't understand why people from the United States would make Polish jokes. You know, just, what do Poles have to do with the United States? And it was in that conversation that I realized, oh, it's always our close, the people closest, you know, in ethnically, it's the people who are closest that are sort of the ones, you know, cause I thought, well, why would a Scandinavian country make fun of another Scandinavian country? But to her, it was the opposite. It was, why would someone so distant from you be the butt of so many jokes in the United States? And there's something there about the closeness and the, you know, like I think about when I began to learn to focus. I wrote a poem not long after learning to focus called "I Had No Home But Sadness," and this was a kind of the refrain of the poem. And I don't know that it's a particularly good poem from an objective point of view, but I remember recognizing that the sadness, again, that I had thought was my enemy, was throughout my life the home that I could always return to, and how grateful I felt for the companionship of that sadness. And in fact, it was a very dear friend.
Yeah.
And so there are these conflicts in the world that are external. You know, that's an internal, what felt like an internal enemy. And there are all these external enemies that I wonder how, I wonder, and I guess I hope for the world that we can somehow, in a focusing community, open up the possibilities in ways that seem unimaginable. Where in fact, the very groups of people who have hated each other the most can find that in fact all along. Mm-hmm. They've been dear friends.
Yeah.
Not only do they need to overcome something, but all along they've been dear friends.
So as I'm listening to you, mm-hmm. You know, something is happening that, say, maybe the listener wouldn't have as much because I'm near you, mm-hmm. and I'm seeing and feeling and sensing the emotion that's happening as you speak. And I just want to highlight it. So that it is present in the room between us and also for people who are listening to this.
Yeah, thank you for that. I'm finding just an amazing amount of emotion as I'm speaking to you, and it's what I love about this process, and why I'm so grateful for focusing is it's always astonishing. Mm-hmm. I had no idea when we sat down to talk that I was going to be thinking about, you know, relations in the Middle East, you mm-hmm. know, or international conflict. It wasn't at all what I thought would come as I spoke to you. And this to me is the miracle of focusing, that that there's so much with, you know, that's available to us when we touch that felt sense. There's just, you know, I'm also a Unitarian Universalist minister, and I've been working as a minister of a congregation for 9 years, and before that did youth ministry for many years, and in those capacities have had the opportunity to teach focusing many times. For me, focusing is a spiritual practice. I learned it as a spiritual practice, and for me, it is a spiritual practice. In Unitarian Universalist congregations, we don't necessarily talk about God all that much. you know, for those who are listening who don't know anything about Unitarian Universalism, it's a religion, religious tradition coming out of Protestant Christianity, but in some ways it's kind of evolved into its own kind of thing where, sometimes my shorthand way of describing it is religion without religion. That it provides a space for a community to form around a seeking of meaning and an agreement, a covenant to have respect for the individual paths that people find. Together we seek together for our own individual paths. As I'm transitioning from being the minister of a congregation to being the executive director of the Focusing Institute, I wrote a letter to someone at the Unitarian Universalist Association talking about why in many ways I can see my new role also as a ministry. And in that letter I articulated something that I'd like to repeat here because I believe it and I think it's true, which is that for me the practice of focusing is a spiritual practice worthy of a free people. That it is a means by which, without dogma, and without doctrine, without shoulds, and so much of the stuff that happens in religion that people rebel against, without any of those, the inhuman constraints, one taps into the most profound wisdom in the universe that one could call God, or not. It doesn't matter. It's a sort of a place where the deepest wisdom, the wisdom that, you know, created the universe, that creates the stars, that miraculously has found us here, that we just connect immediately through the felt sense to that great wisdom.
So you're talking about connecting to that great wisdom, and in a way you have answered a question that I'm going to phrase. But when you're talking about focusing as a spiritual practice, the question would be to say, "Oh, aha! Are you talking about something that's like a religion or something of that nature?" And you said, you know, we're seeking together for our individual paths. So there's a very clear sense of it's not one way of doing thing or a should or a framework.
Right. Well, you know, it's like Jean Gendlin talks about language as there's a common meaning in our language, and words come with baggage. Not Jean's language, but that's sort of the common language. And so it's especially when one uses any kind of language that rings of religion or sort of traditional, that kind of traditional language, people will often jump to thinking, oh, this is something that, there's a right way and a wrong way. There's some authority outside of myself that's going to tell me that this is moral and that's immoral. That's not healthy for the human spirit to have those kinds of constraints and to have external authorities mm-hmm. that tell us without reference to our own wisdom and our own felt sense, that tell us what is right, what is wrong, what the truth is with a capital T. That's extremely unhealthy and unhelpful, and is the very opposite of what I think focusing is all about, which is an utter faith in the wisdom which is inside of each individual mm-hmm, mm-hmm. human being. When I'm privileged enough to sit with someone and teach them focusing or just companion them as they're focusing, I always remind myself and sometimes say explicitly to them, especially if I'm teaching them focusing, that I, as the companion, am utterly here at the service of the wisdom that's inside of you mm-hmm. as the focuser. Mm-hmm. So anything I say or suggest or do is to be immediately rejected if it is not what the felt sense is desiring mm-hmm. In that moment.
Yeah, yeah. So that sense of not being there to present a voice of what's right.
Right.
But of listening and helping that sense inside.
Right.
To come about.
Right. And I'm even a little bit wanting to back off from the word helping.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just offering a space, mm-hmm. I would feel a little more like what I'm doing is just offering an invitation or space. And
So in a way, as you describe this attitude, I'm tempted to do the opposite of what I said at the very beginning.
As am I.
And because you were talking about, you said we were going to talk about focusing and not so much about the role. But in a way, this brings me to say, what's your attitude about being in a role of leadership, quote unquote, in the Focusing Institute?
Yeah, thank you. Because that was, I think you and I were sensing the same direction, because that feels very much like the way that I see myself being with the Institute mm-hmm. is very much in the way that a companion can be with a focuser, just offering to hold a space and to allow wisdom to emerge. Mm-hmm. Everyone that I've spoken to, nearly everyone I've spoken to about this role, I've said there's so much wisdom and brilliance and goodwill and dynamism in the focusing community that I have total confidence coming into this role, because I know it's just a matter of allowing the, or not even allowing, doesn't feel quite like the right word, but something like not hindering all of that brilliance to emerge, and yet also at the same time holding the space.
Mm-hmm.
So there is
mm-hmm.
a role for me. I mean, if it were simply not hindering, then we wouldn't need me or an institute at all.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a holding of the space, and as gently as possible steering when there's some misdirection of energy. So I'm thinking of a woman that I just last night I was teaching a woman to focus, and it was the very first time she had ever focused, and she had some anger that was kind of, she was feeling it in her the back of her neck.
Mm-hmm.
And as she was talking about it, she was sort of touching on a felt sense, but quickly coming back into what my felt sense was telling me was lots of old language around analyzing this anger. And so I, you know, there's different schools of focusing. Some people really never give any guidance, only give reflective feedback. But in this instance, as a teacher, I really wanted to help her to stay with the felt sense. And so I as gently as I knew how, and in the ways that I felt were consistent with where she was and what was comfortable for her, I kept kind of wanting to and trying to steer her toward her felt sense, and based on her response, I feel I was successful in that. And so I think there are there are going to be times as executive director that I think that I'm going to want to say, well, you know, some of what we're doing, maybe we need to steer this way. And the beautiful thing is, in working with focusers all the time within the Institute, I have so much complete faith that that just now, you and I, mm-hmm. our felt senses were picking up on the same thing. I have complete faith that if I'm, as executive director, saying, okay, let's maybe steer things in this direction, that they're sort of wanting to go off a little bit in this other direction that doesn't feel right, let's steer them back in this other direction that feels more right, I have real confidence that others, in checking their felt senses, will either confirm mine, or if they don't, then that is something to be that I will want to attend to also, so that we together will confirm whether some of that is, those directions are right for yeah. us.
So as you talk, you know, I'm noticing, you know, I'm in front of you, and people, you know, would only have the sound. So
yeah.
I feel a need to describe a little bit of what I'm seeing.
Okay.
And so, you know, your face is oriented inside, you
uh-huh.
know, so you're,
okay.
you know, very clearly a sense of you looking inside to kind of letting something come up.
Mm.
And at the same time, your hands are moving. And there is a sense of, you know, say like sculpting clay or, so in a way what is conveyed in the visual is also the sense of that being a process in which you are in touch with yourself and also touching and feeling what's happening.
Ah.
And so I'm getting this image of the work as something in a way about, you know, that sensation of creating something in a tactile way.
Wow.
You know, sculpting something as wow. opposed to starting from ideas or what should be or conceptions.
Thank you for that. Thank you. Thank you. I really, that resonates. It's wonderful. I appreciate hearing that. And I would say that the image I had more than clay was a farm,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, herding cattle, that they go slow. They sort of want to go in this direction. Okay. And I'm kind of feeling like there's a big wide open space,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
And so, okay. All right. So these cows are kind of drifting over that way. And I'm just going to kind of see where they're going and just see if that feels right.
Right. Right. Right. So that sense of, you know, like what, traditionally, the expression herding cattle would mean is a sense of forcing them to go someplace. And the way you're describing it is, you say, you know, kind of listening and paying attention to where they want to go and see if that feels right.
Mm.
So in some way, again, the word hurting is you know, to be taken with a grain of salt in that case.
Yes, thank you. And that's leading me to think about having been the minister of a congregation for 9 years. One thing I've really learned is about leadership is that it's almost indistinguishable from following. The youth director at my congregation had a sign on the wall that said, "There go my people. I must follow them because I'm their leader." And you know, with a congregation, it's all people who come of their own free will or don't, mm-hmm. Week after week, and participate of their own free will and give financially of their own free will or not, and so it did not matter when I started at that congregation what my idea was of what they ought to be,
mm-hmm.
or what my idea was of what they ought to want, what direction they ought to want to go in. That any way in which I clung to that, only served to, make me miserable. that was the thing it did best. And actually, about 2 years into being a minister of the congregation, I had a wise mentor who I was going to be preaching a sermon, and it was the sermon on the amount, we sometimes say, which was they were kicking off the fundraising, mm-hmm. Month of fundraising. And so this wise mentor said to me, I was feeling a lot of frustration because I had come into the congregation with a certain idea, mm-hmm. of what my ministry there would look like, what the congregation would look like after I had started, how they would change once I got there. And so this mentor said, so I was talking about writing the sermon and saying, well, I don't really know what to say to them because because of all the disappointments that I was feeling at that point in my ministry. And she said, what sermon would you write if you were to reflect back to them who they thought they were and where they wanted to be going?
Hmm.
And so I did that, and that was a real shift in my ministry because I had the discipline that week of writing a sermon that was a real effort for me to sense where who they wanted to be, mm-hmm. and what of that I could affirm.
Right, right.
So, for instance, this congregation was just not many Unitarian Universalist congregations are very involved in social justice projects. And in my life immediately prior to coming to the congregation, I was working at a college doing campus ministry and doing a lot of social justice and service to the community, working with homeless people, doing political work, but a lot of social change work, mm-hmm. Social justice, social change work. And I thought that that's who I was, so when I came to this congregation, that would be my ministry in this congregation. And it just wasn't where they wanted to go. So mm-hmm. I was frustrated that there had been almost nobody had really picked up that it was just not something that was happening in the congregation. And so in that week when I wrote that sermon, I realized that what this congregation did love was the arts. Any program that had to do with the arts, they immediately picked up and ran with. And that was something that I could also love and affirm for them. So it was a... So I guess in relating that to the Focusing Institute, I mean, I've learned, you know, I've really learned that it's, that there is no good that can come of a leader, simply charging forward with some idea that is not in sync with, mm-hmm. with where the where others are. It's just simply gets you nowhere.
Yeah. So that's actually a sense in a way that when you had to write when that sermon, it was a chance for you to shift from where you thought they should be to where they are.
Yeah.
And examine in what way you were in sync or not, or in what way you were part of it.
Yeah. That's right.
So this feels like a good place, but just want to check if there's something else you might want to add or if we leave it at this.
I do feel like I have more that I'd like to add.
Good.
All right. Nothing, you know, really specific, except I guess there's just something... very alive in me right now, because being at the congregation, you know, as I may have mentioned, I have taught focusing in my congregation over the 9 years that I was there, but there was not, you know, in a similar way to what I was saying about the social justice is just the congregation, people were receptive, people learned, a number of people did learn to focus, and it was meaningful to them, but it didn't become, it wasn't something that my ministry at the congregation really revolved around. It was not something that we together, it was not in the cards for that to be an important part of my ministry with them. And now that I have told them I'm leaving, and so I have there's 2 months of transition that I'm in the middle of right now. I still have about another month there where I'm transitioning away from the congregation and to the Institute. So, you know, they've heard me talking about focusing over these 9 years, and now that I'm leaving to be the executive director of the Focusing Institute, now there's been this wonderful flowering in the congregation of all of these people and groups of people wanting to learn focusing. And so I've had a number of just extraordinary moments in the last few weeks. So it's a real, this also makes me feel a little teary because it's, I'm so grateful that, that I'm able to have these times with these members of the congregation. And I was visiting Gene Gendlin, about 2 weeks ago. And told him, was telling him this, that all of a sudden everybody in my congregation wants to learn focusing. And that I had just the night before that I visited Gene, I had had a focusing session with a woman. I had done a group focusing session with a group that she was a part of a couple of days earlier. And then she had something she really wanted to work with in focusing. And so we had a private session for about an hour. And she was wrestling with these two very different parts of herself. One part that was like a little girl wanting to be completely free and without restraint. And another part that was like the mommy saying, no, bad girl, you know, get in your room. And she was really wrestling with these two, and just they didn't even want to be in the same room with each other. And there was a moment in which she said, a third person needs to be born. Another person needs to be born. And it was just such a beautiful moment. And then after the focusing session ended, she said, yeah, so that third person really needs to be born. And I shared with her, I think that third person was just born. And that felt right and true to her. And I shared that with Gene, and it was nice to share it with him and be able to give that back to him in gratitude, you know, for his having given us the opportunity to have all these experiences. So so I guess I'm really, it was just really kind of something about sharing that story feels.
So, you know, as I'm hearing the story, I'm moved in a couple of different ways. Yeah. Part of it is about that third person is born, which, you know, in a way all of us are dealing with this in some different way.
Yeah.
And so there's something very, you know, appropriate in that story coming up in a time like this. But I'm also hearing a lot about that theme of gratitude. In your part, and maybe just want to, you know, to highlight it or underline it or give it some room.
Thank you for that. I have been so well, you know, being a minister, the word blessed has been coming to me a lot. And you know, the word blessed comes from the word blood. It comes from the blood on the altar. And so there's and that feels right to share because of that, you know, that is through that pain. It's you know, so there's that meeting of that, you know, something very painful and something very, it's, you know, the word miraculous, you know, comes to mind. And so I've been feeling really, really, really blessed. And, you know, I've been at this congregation, as I've said, for 9 years, and it's been a wonderful experience. And I've been aware for a time that it would be time to move on from that. And so I had been keeping my eyes open for what would be next in my life. And whenever I sat with what do I feel is next, or whenever someone asked me, or, you know, all, whatever kinds of conversations or thinking I did around that, two separate things would come up. One kind of from a head place, looking at what I enjoy, what I feel like I'm good at, what I feel would best use my gifts. It has felt like being an executive director in a nonprofit was the right next thing, rather than going to another congregation, which I could also do and that would be fine. But the thing that felt most right was executive director. And then, totally separate from that, I knew in the depths of my being that whatever happened next, focusing really would need to be central to that. In a way that until this month it hasn't been at my congregation, but that focusing would have to be at the center of whatever came next. And so, the fact that both, it never would have occurred to me, and this to me is like one of the, to me all sorts of miracles happen in the focusing world, and I guess I'm using the word miracle again. It's a religious word that that, or it comes from a certain kind of, it's used in certain sort of circles, so I don't mean it in so much a supernatural way. I mean mm-hmm. it in a supremely natural way. but the fact that those two come together and that it is, I really am overwhelmed with gratitude. And gratitude to all of those, you know, who have been a part of, from the focusing world and from my life, my congregation. I'm grateful to my congregation. I'm grateful to the focusing world. You know, everything that's sort of aligned to make this possible mm-hmm. for me. Mm-hmm. And the feedback that I've been getting is that the seems that my felt sense around that it just feels very right. I'm getting the feedback that for many people it feels like a good moment, a good fit, mm-hmm. that it, for this moment in our history, that it feels very right. So.
Thank you, Catherine.
Thank you so much, Serge.
This is part of the Focusing Conversations series of the Focusing Institute, hosted by Serge Prangle. All contents are protected by copyright. You can find other such conversations on our website at focusing.org/conversations.